This is the Stage Notes Podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, I'm chatting with Nicole Fossey. If you're listening to this podcast and you are a fan of theater or dance, you know that Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon were icons of the stage and screen, but to Nicole Fossey, they were family. Here's our conversation.
You know, when I think of Gwen Verdon and Bob Fosse, I memorialize them, as I think many fans of American theater and dance do, as these icons. They were our Marvel. They are our Marvel superheroes. They are our Marvel universe. Was there a moment growing up when you became aware of their celebrity?
I did become aware after my father won the Triple Crown, the Tony, the Emmy, and the Oscar, all as director. I did become aware, it seemed to me, other people were treating him differently, that there was a little bit more fawning over him. And as far as my mother goes, it was always very curious to me. We would be walking down the street together in New York City, and she would be stopped on the street by another pedestrian who would say something like, "Oh my God, you look just like Gwen Verdon. I can't believe this. You look just like her." And my mother would respond with something to the effect of, "Oh, I hear that all the time. Have a lovely day," and keep walking. And I asked her, I'm like, "But Mom, you are Gwen Verdon." And she said, "Yes, but I don't want to get into that right now. This is private time. This is family time. We're going to go buy new sneakers," or whatever we were doing. She was creating a division between personal life and public life, that she didn't want a fan base attitude to infiltrate her private time, family time.
In the miniseries Fosse Verdon, there's a moment in the film where the actors playing you and your dad are dancing around the living room. Talk about your home life and childhood and growing up Fosse.
Dance was the language in the family. And I guess, even to use a more modern catchphrase, dance was our love language. And I would dance with my father. I witnessed my mother and father dancing together in the living room. I danced with my mother. I would dance with girlfriends and put on shows for my mother and or my father and their friends. It was the language in the household that brought everybody together. It was how we communicated with each other. I think any child of anybody, it's very normal. Whatever their parents do for a living is their normal. I was told a story. I went to a private school in New York City, and the psychologist called my parents in and said, "We think there's a problem with your daughter." I was maybe 4 years old, 5 years old. They had given us dolls, and we had to create our family out of these two-dimensional dolls. And I didn't take the father and the mother figure, because the mother had on an apron and the father was in a business suit. I took the sister, who was in a miniskirt, and the brother, who was in jeans and a t-shirt, and I made those my parents. Because my parents did not go to work. Well, my father did have a briefcase, but he didn't go to work in a tie and hard shoes. And my mother did not wear an apron. She did when she was cooking in the kitchen, but that wasn't my image of her. My image of my mother was in high heels and a mini skirt, kicking her legs around and laughing. So that was my normal. And when I tell stories now, I can see it on people's faces that they're surprised at what was normal for me. I went to a concert of Liza Minnelli's, and I came to her dressing room afterwards, and we immediately started talking about bunions and how they hurt and what do you do with them in your shoes and think, because Liza is a dancer, Liza's a performer, Liza's a singer, Liza's an actress. The famous part is something else that other people perceive her as, but what she's doing at work is singing, dancing, and acting. And so there's a reality to that. There's the grit and the hard work of that, which includes bunions and blisters and warming up and sinus infections and all the things. And so that was my normal, was being around people that worked really hard at their craft and happened to be really, really good at their craft and were seen as, and they were extraordinary. And then it's the public that turns them into an idol. You see it even more today. I mean, it's, we don't have royalty. We have Hollywood. And it's really, I think, disproportionate. I don't think it's healthy to completely idolize sports figures, Hollywood figures. They're people doing their job. I remember when I was, I don't know how old, maybe 12, maybe 14, and the Sonny and Cher show was on television, and I was in love with Cher. And I said to my mother that when I grew up, I wanted to be like Cher. And my mother's response to me was, "Do you also want her problems?" And it had never dawned on me that some figure that I was idolizing had a real life with real problems, with real situations. They stubbed their toe, they still have to put on high heels. They have indigestion, they still have to sing. And on and on. I'm keeping this very PG.
Well, and I think also what you're speaking to, which is something I am very, I feel acutely aware of because I have two children myself, is some of these young people are growing up in this YouTube generation where it's all about the viral videos, it's all about these viral dances. And what I love about following Verdun Fossey legacy on social media is you're really focusing some of the videos are really focusing on technique and process rather than just this glossy finished product.
When we as a culture, as our little community pods, idolize different people, whether they're in sports or in the entertainment industry, we then, as a, we'll just talk entertainment, but we then, as a budding young performer, begin to think that acting like an idol is what is going to bring us success. And so it becomes this external falsehood, this external donning of costume and face and behavior and attitude that is mimicking an idol in order to promote ourselves. And at our Verdun Fossey Legacy professional training program, we strip that away. So one of the things that in creating the the professional training program, one of the things that I realized was what you're talking about, YouTube and everyone copying things from the outside. That's what was happening with my parents' works. People were watching YouTube videos and learning right foot, left foot, bump the hip, shrug the shoulders. And there was no instruction behind it. So it became, there's a great lyric in Sweet Charity, a copy of a copy of a copy of Dior. It became a copy of a copy of a copy of Fosse. And so no matter how fabulous our teachers are, and they are all extraordinary teachers, educators, reconstructors, no matter how fabulous they are, those students have a very different background of training than what my parents had. And so it was a near impossible job for our teachers to really teach the material because the starting place was so different than the starting place for my parents. So at the professional training program, we have an entire morning foundations, which include not only ballet and Fosse jazz, but also Horton Modern, Jack Cole, flamenco, Afro-Caribbean, rhythm classes, classical Indian, theater games, vocals. And we very specifically, directly tie in what you're learning in a foundation class to a piece of choreography. So I utilize my father's choreography the same way a classical dance school would use a piece of choreography as in variations. So the same way you might learn the four signets from Swan Lake, or a section of Revelations from Ailey. But that's not your class. You can't just perform Revelations without taking all the modern classes, all the Afro-Caribbean classes. You need the foundational background so that you can, a dancer can approach, a performer can approach the work, the piece, with this background of embodied physical knowledge.
And that brings an authenticity to the work, which I think becomes evident on stage or on screen. You talk about your parents' background in dance and the performers you're training now. I feel like dance on screen and on stage has gone through such a evolution. So how have you seen dance change, particularly on stage?
It seems to me one of the things that's happening, and this is partially attributable to, you know, the American idea that more is better and sensationalism and the competition dance world. It seems to me that a lot of choreography, not all choreography, but a lot of choreography is becoming sensationalized. It's tricks. It's how high can you kick your leg, not the quality of the kick. How many times can you turn, not the quality of the turning, the musicality of the turning, and the character building for each individual on stage and how they interact with them, each other, how they interact with each other is being lost. It's becoming, you know, I have my Broadway smile on, I have my Broadway I'm concerned face on, I have my Broadway I'm sad face, I have my Broadway I'm surprised face. And it becomes very, very surface and full of tricks. And there are choreographers that don't do that, that really pull authentic performances out of their performers. And we, as an audience, I think are becoming a little bit numb to authenticity. And we are responding more enthusiastically to
Something highly dramatic.
that may lose touch with the authenticity. I think that was one of the things that both of my parents, in their own individual ways, they were extraordinary at, was being very theatrical, very dramatic, and still somehow maintaining this sense of realism and humanity and authenticity and tapping into the human condition.
I love that. And I also think theater has changed somewhat in that, I was speaking to a dancer who debuted in Hamilton. She was saying it's not enough to be a dancer. You have to be this triple threat now to make it on Broadway, to make it on stage. And your mother particularly was.
Yeah. So my mother used to tell this wonderful story, which is very funny and kind of poignant and sad at the same time. As she grew older and didn't dance and didn't sing anymore, or didn't want to, she was going on calls to break, casting calls to break into television and film as an actress. And she was in her late 50s, early 60s, and would be sitting across from a casting director front man who might be an intern, who might be a college graduate, a recent college graduate. And they would look at her resume. And apparently, one of them said to her, the way she told me the story was, he looked at me and he said, "So you're a dancer?" And she said, "Well, no, if you look at my resume, you'll see." And he said, "Yeah, so you're a dancer." And she was very upset and a little humiliated, I think. And she said, "Well, it seems to me I remember doing something other than singing and dancing besides changing my clothes."
She sounds funny. How would you describe her as funny? She sounds like she had very much a quick wit and very funny.
She was very funny, and very, very polite at the same time. She had very low tolerance for what she thought was other people's narrow-mindedness. And I was telling a story the other day, and I was telling a story the other day, and I was thinking, what word did she use, right? When I asked her when I was a kid, and I said, "Why did, why did somebody do that?" Now I would think of it as, that she might have said something like, "Well, because they're stupid," but she would never say that. She would never say, "Because they're stupid." She would say something like, "Well, I don't know, perhaps they're daft." That would be how she would call somebody out on something.
There are so many books and histories written about your dad and his legacy. We have videos and biographies. I was shocked in my research to learn there's not any kind of biography about your mom.
There is one being written right now. I hope it's on the shelves soon. I was speaking with the author, and he gathered so much information that he believes it needs to be two volumes. And we made a joke that it should be two volumes so that it can flank the book Fosse.
So what I want to ask you is, in learning about her, in watching the miniseries, which I really enjoyed, that was that was must-see TV to so many of us who love theater and dance. I feel like she's kind of the unsung hero in this story, in this legacy. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that she is the unsung hero. I think that's a product of the times that my parents lived in. For example, she bought an apartment on with her success and her money. But my father had to have his name on the deed, because a woman couldn't own a piece of property in the 50s, early 60s, right? Liza Minnelli described her perfectly as like the French woman behind the scenes, that she was always right behind him, supporting what he was doing. And I think she was very comfortable with that. I think that's how she was raised. I think that was a product of the times. And perhaps it was just easier. I think she was coming out of a time when women really had to manipulate situations in order to participate.
We have 109 kids, I told you, coming to camp this summer. They'll be working on songs and scenes from Damn Yankees and The Pajama Game. What do you want them to know about your mom and dad and the legacy of this work?
I believe one of the most important, one of the most crucial elements as a performer, dancer, singer, actor, you are a storyteller and you're telling many stories at the same time. And not all of them have words. And the more of your story you can create and find ways to express it in all of the subtleties, whether it's how you place your hand out to hold somebody else's hand, whether it's a word that you say, a phrase that you sing. It's about storytelling. There's the story of the play, there's the story of the scene. There's the story of the character that you are. So there's all of these different stories in there. And my mother, maybe we can close on this. And I'll use one word. I don't think it's a bad word, really. Not by today's standards, anyhow. My mother used to say to me, at some point, I don't give a rat's ass if I start on my left foot or my right foot. I need to know what I am doing. And we become so concerned with memorizing the lines. And do we start on our left foot or our right foot? What are the notes that I'm singing? All of the, and that's all important. And it is meaningless if we don't have a story behind it that's palpable.
Nicole Fosse is the founder and artistic director of the Verdun Fosse Legacy. The organization performs original Bob Fosse choreography at special events and also reconstructs repertoire for professional dance companies and student performances, as well as offer a variety of classes. I'll put a link to the Verdun Fosse Legacy website in the episode notes.
If you like what you've heard on this episode, please consider subscribing to this podcast, visit us online at stagenotes.org, or follow us on social media on TikTok or Facebook at Stage Notes or at Official Stage Notes on Instagram. Until next time, break a leg.